Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
I'm Kate Thornton. Join me every week on White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks famous faces three thought-provoking questions over three glasses of wine.
It's very rare to be introduced with such a thorough introduction, and it's kind of lovely to listen to all that and go, yeah, I've had a good life, right?
You really have.
How did you find that? I can't even remember. Yeah.
You do your research, Kate, man. I'll tell you that.
Do you know what? You are the only person ever, no other journalist has ever made that connection.
Wow, what a great question.
And receives some truly memorable answers.
And Tom Cruise came, and Nicole Kidman. I go to him, listen, before you go, Tom, I just want you to know, if you fancy a foursome, I'm up for it, and I know Anne-Marie doesn't mind.
When I first dated my now husband, I joined a gym for, I'm going to say, £1,000 a year, just so I could go off and have a poo.
I actually got heckled once in Wales, and there was a bloke at the bar on crutches, and he actually said to me, I'd rather fall over than listen to this shit. And he threw his crutches at me and fell over. Can you believe that?
I've got some cat's ashes, I don't know who they are.
You've been catfished by your own cat.
Exactly, seriously, man.
Dad, have you thought about putting in a breakfast nook? And my dad would think of that. Have you thought about getting your own fucking house?
How did you give a duck an orgasm, Craig?
It's good with them, you know.
I know my way around a duck.
So, if you fancy a sit-down with the likes of Adam Hills, Tom Allen, Hannah Waddingham, Phil Tufnell, James Acaster and Ed Gamble, Daisy May Cooper, and tons more, then join me every Tuesday and Friday. Search White Wine Question Time in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now. White Wine Question Time is a Stack production.
Welcome to Upfront on Football Ramble Presents. I'm Flo Lloyd-Hughes.
I'm Chloe Morgan.
And I'm Rachel O'Sullivan.
Today we look back on the Women's Champions League from the weekend. It did not disappoint. 11 goals across both ties as Barcelona put on a show against Wolfsburg and Lyon battled past their title rivals PSG.
Gets away from Janssen. Now Graham Hansen can keep on going. Graham Hansen to make it two! A brilliant finish against her former club. Barcelona well in control, and they've got two.
Back in the WSL, Champions League qualification is no longer in Man United's hands. What exactly has gone wrong? And with news that the government will be conducting an in-depth review into women's football, we ask, what's it all for, and how can the government and the FA truly build for the Euros?
Rapinoe gets a cross in. It's towards one.
Et Kerber qui va lever son ballon. Et ça va être 3-1. Et celui-ci est d'une très très haute importance. Le nouveau doublé pour Ada Hegerberg.
Before we get stuck into the Champions League, because it's hotting up, I want to ask Chloe about her hot weekend in Bromley.
Amazing segue.
Last Palace home game of the season.
Seamless.
Yes. I've seen a lot of cute, wholesome stuff on social media. A big win, big crowd. It was great vibes.
It was beautiful. Like, honestly, couldn't have been a better day. We had so many of the youngsters, like, from Palace and all their families come down. We had a few birthdays. We're taking, like, loads of shots and doing all signatures and things like that at the end. And, you know, it was massive because I think we've got such amazing fans that sort of travel with us all over the country. And, you know, they've got the banners up and things like that. And at the end, it was just like a real kind of like heartwarming thing. And I think that's the thing with, you know, you come to the end of the season, you don't know who you're going to be playing with next year or where people are going to be. And, you know, it was really quite emotional. Like when you look back and sort of see what we've achieved this season and you know, we couldn't be proud of the girls for all the hard work and effort that's gone in. So, it felt a bit like
cute.
you know, heartwarming, but like sad, but also like emotional and wonderful.
I'm kind of starting to think maybe that Box Park Wembley shout out worked.
I think it did. Yeah. I mean, we had a pretty decent crowd. Yeah. I mean, it's, you know, Bromley FC is pretty difficult ground to get to, but we had a pretty decent
classic
crowd.
Vibes.
Literally classic women's football vibes. but yeah, it was just a beautiful day. Yeah. Really lovely atmosphere.
I've got two questions for you. I'll go with the hard question first. When is everyone going to find out about their future at Palace? Like, that's kind of obviously going to be an awkward time. So how soon after the season do you find out?
So technically, I mean, our contracts sort of end in the next few weeks and month or so. And then we start having the contract talks in the next couple of weeks. So it's, yeah, it gets nervy every single year around this time. Anxiety is high. Yeah.
Legal head on.
Yes. You know, looking at those contracts, thinking about your next move, your strategies and things.
This whole changing room's out of order.
Top negotiator, Chloe Morgan.
You can't handle the truth.
Literally. That kind of talk gets you kicked out of a club.
and then my more fun question is, how have you been perfecting your signature for all the autographs you're giving your adoring fans at Bromley? Has it taken you a while to master what you want your signature to look like?
To be honest, my signature is a bit of a shit show.
Just see Morgie 69, quick little.
Why would it be 69?
Why not?
Why would it be 69?
Wouldn't it be?
Signing programmes for children. What's wrong with you?
Do you do full name or do you do like initials?
Yeah. Did you see Morgue?
I literally just do a CM and then the number one.
Number one, baby. The best.
But then I need to remember, like, when I go back into the office, I can't sign off a client letter, CM number one.
Oh,
my God, you should.
It's a bit much.
You absolutely should. Number one lawyer.
Chloe, we're due in court next week, but you seem to have signed this CM1.
You're damn
confused.
Right.
Yeah, I did, because I'm number one, baby. Love it. Well, hope you finish the season strong away at Sheffield United. You got absolutely smashed by Liverpool. So do you think that bodes well for you guys?
Absolutely. We're going to hit them while they're down, apparently.
Fighting talk.
Very fighting talk. Let's get on to the Champions League, because, I don't know, I prefer the semi-finals to be midweek. I think they get a bit lost in the weekend's football when they're
across
the weekend.
I was not expecting it. I don't think anyone was. We asked Emma Hayes about it on her press conference on Friday and she was like, didn't even know it was tonight. Thanks for telling me.
Yeah, it kind of came out of nowhere. And obviously because an English team isn't involved, it's we're obviously going to be less aware of it in our own little bubbles. But I think they've been on the weekends for quite a while now. They certainly were last season because I remember doing that Bayern Munich semi-final Chelsea had on the Sunday. But yeah, it's a bit frustrating because I do think, especially with the way the men's calendar is, it could have worked really well if it was like Wednesday, Thursday night, although they didn't have men's Champions League last week. Anyway, it's getting lost in the calendar. But whatever, I think Friday and Sunday was a bit strange. The Barcelona game kicked off at 5:45 UK because it was a public holiday in Spain, so they changed the kickoff time. It was all just a bit strange. I feel like it got lost. But two very interesting games. I was meeting some friends in the pub to watch Barcelona Wolfsburg, and I got there and it was already 2-0 to Barcelona, and I was like, oh, okay. And then three more went in very quickly. So that was interesting, but shout out the Red Line and Angel for sticking DAZN on all of the TVs, and we made friends with this like hilarious old man who was alone drinking in there and was like, wow, what a crowd. And like, he was really into it, and like, he was great little new ally for women's football, but
also featuring on our podcast next week.
Yeah, bring him in. A few points in. But yeah, it was a weird game. It was a weird game because I feel a bit like when Arsenal played Barcelona at home, as soon as you make a mistake and it almost gets into your head against Barcelona, it like crumbles so quickly and it can unravel so quickly. And that's kind of what happened to Wolfsburg.
Yeah, and I feel like it gets into Barcelona's head. They like smell blood and suddenly it's like all guns blazing and I'm getting really distracted by a fly flying around the studio. Yeah, I feel like
what are your thoughts on Barcelona fly?
It's now on my computer screen, so I think, yeah, once you let in that early goal against Barcelona, it feels like
the floodgates,
yeah,
right?
And I would have expected more from Wolfsburg in terms of their experience in the Champions League. They have played big games before. They have played tough teams before. And I didn't expect them to crumble quite so quickly. To be honest, I expected that from inexperienced teams from England. It was almost like the Chelsea-Barcelona final vibes where Wolfsburg just didn't seem to turn up. But I know Oberdorf was injured. You know, she's a key player, but I'd like to think Wolfsburg
there's enough talent in there. I mean, Iwa Pajor is still working her way back to full fitness, so she came on as a sub and she would have ideally been starting for them if she had been, but it's a bit too early, I think, to throw her in. But they've still got talent there. Pop, Jill Roard, who's had a good Champions League campaign, got Wolfsburg's kind of sympathy goal towards the end of the game, but it's an uphill battle, isn't it?
It was just disappointing. I think I just expected more from them. And I was surprised to see, I mean, Wolfsburg kept playing this very high line at the back.
That was ridiculous.
And it was so high that they just kept getting caught out every single time. I was like, it's a really easy fix. Just don't play that
high.
It's
just a simple ball through or over the top and you're done.
Yeah. Destroyed. Absolutely destroyed.
And then in the second half, I think they adapted things a little bit, sat a little bit deeper, but then Barcelona were so good at playing through them. The movement is so good. I mean, they genuinely could play football with blindfolds on.
Yeah.
It's ridiculous. I think, was it Graham Hansen who made that dummy where she let it roll between her legs for maybe the third goal? I kind of lost count of what goal was what, but there was, or maybe it actually was just a chance, but there was one where she was kind of standing on the edge of the box, let the ball roll through her legs. And it was ridiculous. And I can't remember who had the chance, but they dropped in behind her and they just knew the ball was going to fall. It was just so good.
It's poetry on the pitch. What's a bit frustrating is what I like about this new format is you as fans and other teams get to see teams like Barcelona playing more big matches and playing up against different types of football. And look, every team is beatable. Don't ask me how to beat Barcelona, but every team is beatable. And
Real Madrid came mighty close in that first leg.
Yeah, and I guess I would have expected a team like Wolfsburg to have figured out an area that they could exploit. I was a bit flat after the first half, a little bit disappointed. I kind of have a little bit of a soft spot for Wolfsburg. It's going to be a bloody tough battle in the next leg.
Yeah, I wonder how they'll play it because I feel like that first leg from Real Madrid that they ended up narrowly losing, and I think they were hard done by with a VAR call and that pen, they did so well because they matched Barcelona. They matched them with the press. They matched them with the aggression. And Barcelona couldn't cope with it. And I feel like we haven't seen anyone try and do that in the Champions League. We've seen Arsenal and now Wolfsburg to an extent try and wait for an opportunity, hit them on the break, play direct over the top, and it not work because they're undone by a mistake and the whole situation crumbles in front of them. So I wonder if that is the way to do it. Obviously, Real Madrid didn't end up having success with that. But it's almost like being aggressive might be the better option than what a lot of managers are trying at the moment, which is to sit and absorb and hope that you can stay organised, which Wolfsburg struggled to do, and then hit them on the counter.
Yeah, and I would have expected them to try something like, you know, it's always going to be difficult to beat them. I think Wolfsburg know that. But to at least keep yourself in the tie in the first leg, to at least try and keep yourself as close as possible so that, you know, when it does come to the second leg and it is at home, maybe something can happen. I don't have words for it. I'm just really quite disappointed.
I think it's that. I think they missed a trick here. I mean, Real Madrid kind of set a template for how it's done. And I don't think any team has really has taken any lessons from that and followed suit.
This is what I mean. It
was just like suffocate them. That's the only way to put out Barcelona fires.
And be really aggressive and wind them up. They were winding them up in that game. You know, there were a few bookings as well in that first half. But be interesting to see what happens. Barcelona go into the second leg with a 5-1 lead.
But like even Koya, wasn't it Koya who like held them to a 1-0 in the early stages of the Champions League? Like while Real Madrid has shown like a really potential way of beating them, that's another way that could potentially work. So like you say, I'm just surprised no one's kind of learned from what we've seen so far in this Champions League.
Do you think that return leg, Wolfsburg at home, they're going to go for a damage limitation or they're just going to go all out? Do you think? I mean, because if you were a player, I was thinking at halftime, I just wish the referee would blow the whistle then and there because you're like, what's the point?
Part of me feels like it's probably going to be damage limitation. I don't think they'd want to see a 5-1 game in front of their own fans as well. And, you know, I reckon it'll be damage limitation.
I disagree. I think they're going to go full force. I mean, at this point, they've got absolutely nothing to lose. Yeah. So you might as well try a completely different tactic and go straight at them. But I mean, that comes with its risks. The more you press, the more you're exposed at the back. So it's either going to be 5-5 or it's going to end up at 25.
I mean, that would be iconic. Their second leg is this Saturday at 5 p.m. Wolfsburg at home, obviously going to be on DAZN as per. The other semi-final first leg was really spicy, really interesting. A real kind of topsy-turvy game. Lyon 3, PSG 2. a good crowd at the Groupama as well. PSG started things like they dominated the first sort of like 15 minutes, got their goal, which did come from a Lyon mistake trying to play out from the back. Buchanan was just swarmed on, lost possession. Renard was kind of like playing musical statues and
what
got completely
destroyed.
It was
destroyed. Like in a Mexican standoff in the box. They just like stared at each other for what felt like 5-6 seconds.
And it was actually ironic because Jesse Vargo-Humphreys tweeted about that video that I don't know if you saw at halftime of the Barcelona-Wolfsburg game. That DAZN had done an interview with Dembele and Renard, and Renard was quoted saying, "Yeah, I just never let anyone get past me."
Oh.
And then he was like, "Oh, hon." And literally 2 days later, it's like you just literally stunned like Medusa's just hit you, and you're like, ugh.
"Yeah."
But yeah, like that. And so I thought, okay, PSG are causing problems. They've got such a good front line that you know so many European teams and so many teams in their own league struggle to deal with. And I have to say, unfortunately, PSG were kind of undone by their goalkeeper's mistakes. It could have been a whole different game.
I feel like every goal was a bit of a mistake, to be honest. Even the first
goal. All three of Lyon's goals came from her errors.
But even the PSG goals, that she should not be scoring on that inside post like that. And again, Renard just standing there looking at her. Every goal made me wince.
PSG's second as well. Like Lyon really just... this is what's quite funny about this game. It's like two slightly chaotic defensive lines and goalkeepers completely out of sync, completely freaking out and undoing all the good work of their attacking lines. It's bizarre.
For the quality that was played kind of in between the boxes, when it actually got to the boxes, it just kind of went, like it just fell apart like a wet cake. Do you know what I mean? I was like, what the hell is happening? This is not what you'd expect.
Weird though, like because I had a completely different take on some of those goalkeeping errors. And I think...
Goalkeepers Union!
Oh my God, tell me.
I'm not going to lie, because I was looking back and I was like, okay, I was thinking initially she's had a bit of a shit show here. I mean, you just do have those games. But like I think in the first goal, Kotakova's obviously come out. She's tried to clear up the second ball and then it's gone to the penalty. And I think the only reason that then becomes what she's done is technically accurate. She's followed up on the second ball, tried to go out for it, tried to get something on it, and she's not gone for the player.
Yeah, I think the penalty is probably the least bad of the
100%. Yeah. And I think it's the touch that she takes that then sort of clips it away.
It's still
from
a mistake.
Her. I don't think it's a mistake though. She's done the right thing. But it's because the striker gets that little touch to take the ball away that I think, because what else is she going to
do? No, she has no choice. She has to go for it.
And I think then with the second goal, it was that dodgy goal kick. I think she sort of, when I was looking back over the footage, she actually slips as she's taking it, and I don't think that's great. And then obviously she should have followed it up.
Her defence were very slow to react.
Mm. Very slow to react. So I think that was poor. And then the third goal, I mean, it was the pass back, but I was thinking, okay, what's happening?
She's
here?
In no man's land. She's like, am I going to go? Am I going to stay?
It's the defender's fault. She's passed it back, and then it's almost a situation where Kotakova has gone to go and strike it, just get the ball clear. Her body language, she's open up to just go and strike and hoof that ball away. The defender has continued to run straight at her, and then almost at the last minute, it looked like she's about to take the ball off to the right-hand side. So for me, I'd be thinking, my defender's taking it. She's dealing with it. She's taking it away because she's not giving me enough time to actually clear the ball. And the worst thing you want to do is clear the ball, it bounces off your defender and goes straight back into the goal. So for me, I was looking at Kotakova and going, do you know what, I'd be fuming at that. It's not, I don't think what she had as bad as game as everyone's making out that she did.
What do you think the words would have been in the change room after? Do you think words were exchanged between her and
I don't think anyone defense? Holds back at PSG, do they?
No.
I mean,
it's
you
a pretty
saw
volatile squad, isn't it?
Kotakova, when I was looking back over the clips, I mean she was absolutely slamming into her defence. I mean, when that last goal went in, and rightly so, because I think they made her look bad on occasion.
Do you think she'll start the second leg?
I think she should. I'm not a fan of when a goalkeeper makes a mistake, take them off. I don't think it's
only going to make the situation worse, isn't it?
100%. You need an opportunity to bounce back.
I tell you what, when I saw that clip of that goal on Twitter, like just after it happened, and I was just looking, I was like, who's attacking and who's defending here initially? I was like, I can't actually tell who's going for goal and who's not. I agree. I totally see where you're coming from the goalkeeper's point of view. I think every goal was kind of a sloppy mistake, not necessarily putting the blame on anyone in particular. But there was a second one, almost goal, where right after it was handled in the box by Lyon and they broke, and that VAR decision took bloody ages. Lyon broke. player knocked the ball forward and both the keeper and the defender were coming for it. And like, you could see the keeper was going, leave it, leave it, leave it. I've got it. And the defender was like, nah, I'm clearing it. And you can see
the lack of trust and confidence.
And
in
I
another.
Just think that's where you've got your stuff going on off the pitch is probably just influencing a little bit those relationships and those decisions on the pitch. There was a really good article from Charlotte Harper in The Athletic about the whole kind of situation, everything going on off the pitch. And after the kind of first Amrawi situation that happened a few months back, the PSG captain said, "We can hate each other outside, but on the field, we have to manage to win," which I just think is such a weird thing to say. Like, to just be, it's cool. We can all hate each other when we're not playing.
And you know what? Weirdly, that is more of a Leon vibe, because I remember both Megan Rapinoe saying in her book, and I think Shanice van der Sanden kind of hinted it as well in a podcast that she did, that they both found playing at Lyon really tough because it was a very individualistic environment. It wasn't really a squad that made friends with each other. Obviously, lots of individuals coming from all around the world, and it was a squad built on winning but not built on being friends. And it's interesting now that PSG are almost like copying the mold of, like, it doesn't matter if you hate each other, doesn't matter if you can function in the dressing room, you need to go out and win. But arguably, Chloe, you know, like, it's a blend of both. You can't win games when you hate your teammates.
I agree. I think some of the best experiences that I've had and the most successful seasons I've had are where you get on and you have each other's backs on and off the pitch. I mean, with Palace now, I mean, we have that kind of vibe, and it's not a coincidence that we now seem to be sitting at the league. And the same thing with the promotion up in with Spurs. It was the same vibe. We just absolutely loved each other, and it showed on the pitch. Yeah.
But
you can separate the two.
No. But the good thing is, second leg, all to play for, which we can't really say in the other game.
Is it all to play for?
No, I'm saying in this game, there's all to play
for,
which is exciting.
Yeah, I'll give you that. Cool.
Go. Cool, yeah. Saturday, 8 p.m. for the PSG Lyon rerun in Paris. Are you going, Rachel? I was keen to go, but I can't really make it work because it's Saturday and I'm going to be working.
Yeah, I had a similar issue. Had been planning to go, but it is bloody expensive. So no, unfortunately.
And that's why midweek, probably could have gone, guys. Yeah. Nightmare. And it's bank holiday weekend as well in the UK, so it doesn't help
like
pricing.
Proper pricey, yeah.
Yeah. Which is a shame, but I'm sure they'll get a really good crowd there. The ultras as well will be out in 4-4. So definitely watch that, because that is going to be spicy. And PSG and Lyon still to play as well in the Division Féminin. Was that quite good?
That was beautiful.
28th of May, they're going to play, which is the second last game of the season. They finished their season on the 4th of June, which is quite late, shall we say.
God, yeah, that is.
But at the moment, Lyon still have a 5-point lead at the top of the table. So even if PSG win that game, they'll still be 2 points behind going into the last day of the season. Well, that's if they win the next games as well. So I think Lyon will probably take the title, but if PSG knocked out the Champions League, that'd be pretty sweet revenge, wouldn't it? After PSG won the title last season.
And that is that. Cheers from the home fans at the Groupama Stadium, because it's advantage to the side who have won this competition more than any other. 3-2 winners over their rivals.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
I'm Kate Thornton. Join me every week on White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks famous faces three thought-provoking questions over three glasses of wine.
It's very rare to be introduced with such a thorough introduction, and it's kind of lovely to listen to all that and go, yeah, I've had a good life, right?
You really have.
How did you find that?
I can't even remember. Yeah, you do your research, Kate, man. I'll tell you that.
Do you know what? You are the only person ever, no other journalist has ever made that connection.
Wow, what a great question.
And receives some truly memorable answers.
And Tom Cruise came, and Nicole Kidman. I go to him, listen, before you go, Tom, I just want you to know, if you fancy a foursome, I'm up for it, and I know Anne-Marie doesn't mind.
When I first dated my now husband, I joined a gym for, I'm going to say, £1,000 a year, just so I could go off and have a poo.
Actually, I got heckled once in Wales, and there was a bloke at the bar on crutches, and he actually said to me, I'd rather fall over than listen to this shit, and he threw his crutches at me and fell over. Can you believe that?
I've got some cat's ashes, I don't know who they are.
You've been catfished by your own cat.
Exactly, seriously, man.
Dad, have you thought about putting in a breakfast nook? And my dad would say something like that. Have you thought about getting your own fucking house?
How did you give a duck an orgasm, Craig?
It's good with them, you know. And on my way around a duck.
So, if you fancy a sit-down with the likes of Adam Hills, Tom Allen, Hannah Waddingham, Phil Tufnell, James Acaster and Ed Gamble, Daisy May Cooper, and tons more, then join me every Tuesday and Friday. Search White Wine Question Time in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now. White Wine Question Time is a Stack production.
Speaking of European football, looks like Manchester United may not be making the cut for the Champions League next season after drawing 0-0 with Aston Villa on Sunday. Firstly, shout out to Aston Villa because what a performance. One of the stars of the game has to be Anita Asante, and we have to also shout out her. She's announcing her retirement on Tuesday morning, the day that we're recording this podcast. A brilliant little video as well that she's done. Like epic powerful production. I love that she's done that. I think it's so great when players kind of go that extra mile to announce it. And yeah, what a servant to the game. 37. She talks about the titles she's won, winning the Champions League with Arsenal, over 70 caps for her country, played in two World Cups, played in the 2012 Olympics. What a career. And I'm very excited for the next step of her journey because it is just the beginning for her. And she's coupled that with being a fantastic, amazing person off the pitch, always used her platform to fight for equality and the rights of minority voices. And she deserves everything in the next step of her journey. And yeah, what a legend. Chloe, I know you've probably played against her. We couldn't quite remember if you have, but we reckon you have over the years, potentially. But you've done stuff with her off the pitch as well.
Maybe. I couldn't recall actually ever playing against her. I've done a few, I think, talks and seminars and things like that with her. And, you know, every time I've spoken to her, she's just such a lovely, kind human being. And you're completely right. She's always used her platform to advocate for, you know, LGBTQ plus issues. And she's always been a very outspoken player about these kind of things and an incredible role model to generations of girls coming through. So, for me, she's just, you know, I want to wish her the best in all of her retirement, but I don't think this is the last we'll hear of her. I'm assuming she'll probably do a lot more of the sort of commentary and punditry work and I'd love to see more of her do that.
Yeah, agreed. I'm really like sad for us that we don't get to see her play after this season. I don't feel like we kind of enjoyed it enough, you know, because now once that thing is taken away from you, you're like, damn, I actually am really going to miss seeing her play. When you read out all the things that she's achieved in her career, God, if she does even 50% of that outside of playing football, she'll go on to do amazing things. And you could just see from social media today when she announced her retirement, the love from every corner of the game, I think shows you what kind of person she is both on and off the pitch. So she will be sorely missed on the pitch, but I think we'll be very lucky to have her in whatever capacity she chooses to stay in the game.
Yeah, and I feel like when Farrah Williams retired last season, I did an interview with her for
Red Bull's like internal magazine that you get on planes. It's like very niche, but it was very much about it, her retirement being a real end of an era moment for a part of women's football history. And I feel like Anita's retirement feels quite similar. It's like a real segue, a real moment in time for the next generation to harness and take their moment. And I hope that they will be as powerful, as influential, and as inspiring as someone like Anita Asante has been. Because if we don't continue to have people like that in the game, it will be a huge loss for the future of women's football, because you need those voices. And if anything, the players coming forward will probably coming up, you know, up the ranks will have a bit more to lose, because they'll be on, you know, bigger deals, they'll be making more money, and they may be more protective of their platforms. Mm-hmm. And the generation before didn't have that. So they knew that they could be more truthful because they had been through it already and they were looking ahead to the future to come. But I hope that they see what Anita's done and say, you know, I can, you can do that too. You can be a leader on and off the pitch and use your voice for good and have that impact and leave that legacy. So yeah, shout out Anita Asante. What a legend. And go and watch that video if you haven't seen it already, because it is brilliant. So back to Manchester United. 0-0 draw with Villa. City obviously on an unbelievable run, right on their shoulders in the table. They're now a point behind them, but with a game in hand, that game against Birmingham City that was called off because of COVID. It's not in their hands anymore, and it seems like it's going to be City's to take now. And it also has a bit of an impact on that last game of the season against Chelsea, because if everything had been going towards that last day in the season, and United knew that if they won that game, they'd be getting the Champions League, that would have made it much harder for Chelsea. But I feel like now Chelsea fans will be a little bit relieved, because if City win that game and overtake United, then it's kind of like, you know, the pressure is off a little bit. It's not, I'm not saying United will just like chuck it in and be on the beach, but it does make it a slightly different affair.
But I guess with the last game of the season and all fixtures playing at the same time, they have to go into that game with the hope that Man City don't win. So they know that they have to go into the Chelsea game and they have to win every game, like Arsenal, to be in with any chance of getting that Champions League spot. So I think despite the fact that City now have the control of the situation, I don't think that takes anything off that last game. I think it will still be just as important for them, because, or even more important, because, you know, they really have to do absolutely everything. Whereas before, when they had a bit more of a cushion, you know, a loss wouldn't have been as catastrophic.
Mm. And I mean, let's face it, there is a fairly slim chance that Birmingham are going to take points off City.
Hey, they did it against Arsenal.
But Birmingham's win over Brighton at the weekend makes the relegation fight a little bit more interesting now. And if Birmingham were to take points off City, that makes things difficult for Leicester, and it makes things preferable for Manchester United as well, because it gives them back in the fight. So that is, there's a lot of nice little narratives building, and we may have things sewn up fairly well by the end of the season on that last day. But I like the fact that there's things aren't a foregone conclusion yet. But let's talk about Manchester United, because when City were having all their struggles at the start of the season, I certainly gave them not a lot of hope of getting back into Champions League contention. I remember chatting to Tom Gary at the King Power when Man City went a goal down against Leicester City very early on and then pulled it back and won like 4-5-1 or something. And he was telling me, no, City are definitely going to get Champions League. And I said, Tom, no way. They're not getting Champions League. So shout out to Tom Gary for calling it from day one. And I thought it was going to be United's and they were going to hold on to it. But lo and behold, things have gone the way they have. City's goal difference is ridiculous as well. And United look to have dropped out of that. I mean, what do you guys think is the real difference? Because we had a message from Sue. Shout out, Sue. Very engaged, brilliant listener. And she was like, I want you guys to talk about this, because she's disappointed as a United fan who goes to watch them, I think, home and away. And she expected a little bit more of them. And she feels disappointed with some of the tactics from Mark Skinner and some of the ways they've gone about games. What are your guys' thoughts? Because I think they're still quite early on in their project. They've lost Eufor Manion to an ACL injury, which is huge. They had a very good, solid defensive foundation in 80% of their games this season. Weren't good enough in some of those key moments against bigger opposition like Chelsea and Arsenal. But they were building something. Perhaps it's just a little bit too early for them.
I agree with what you say about them being young. I think because they've been so vocal about their ambitions since they kind of came into the WSL, we've maybe our expectations have been a bit too high for them to achieve something in such a short space of time. It sounds cliche, but I think experience has a massive part to do with it. They are a relatively young squad. They've got pretty much a new manager. He's only been there, you know, this is first season. And I think having experiences in those big moments and those big games is actually huge. Like, realistically, I know they've started well in previous seasons, but realistically, come this end of the season, they haven't really had anything tangible to go for in terms of, you know, trophies or winning the league or that Champions League spot, because it was only two. This season, they had something tangible to fight for. And maybe it's that lack of experience in those big games and those big moments when it's on them to keep their hands on that Champions League spot. That's maybe what's caused this. You know, they've had a huge number of draws. I think they've had the most number of draws in the WSL this season. And I think it's that experience of closing out games. But this is something that they're going to go away with this season and put that in their experience bank. I spoke to Emma Hayes about this, about her squad's experience in multiple different types of games and how they're able to draw on that when they're in a situation where they're down to 10 for 70 minutes, for example, that they're able to go on and win the game. And it can be hard for a team or a player to think about that when they've just lost or just missed out on this opportunity. But when it comes around again, and I believe it will, they will have that experience of how to go that one step further. So that's, for me, what I think is what they're lacking.
I don't think there's too much in it. I think we can look back on this season for Man United and feel quite positively about what's happened. I mean, they're now pegging themselves against Man City, who are a well-established, title-winning team, loads of experience behind them. And you look at Man United now, giving them an absolute run for their money this season. I mean, when you look at the goals for, the goals against, there's about a goal or so between Man City and Man United, and they're 1 point between each other. And I think, you know, for a club like Man United to go from championship level to this level in three years is unbelievable. So I think that rise has been astronomical. But I think it was the consistency at the back end of the season that I think is where they've now tailed off. I mean, when you look at the last five games that have been played, Man City have won every five games.
And bizarrely, it was the same under Casey Stoney. It hasn't actually changed that much, because I remember we were having similar conversations last season about whether or not they was going to get that third spot in the Champions League. And similarly, their season really tailed off. I think they lost to Brighton. And they drew a couple of games towards the end of the season, and then it was like, right, game over. And it feels like a similar pattern, like you say, the second half of the season, building that momentum that other clubs are doing so well.
It's that, and I think it gets really hard. At the back end of the season, everyone's tired, you've got fatigue setting in, people might be worried about their contracts and things like that. Loads of different things are happening sort of mentally for players at that time, but that's when, especially when you are so close to the end and so close of achieving something special for the club, that's when it really you need to step up, not coast or not even drop your standards. That's when the step up needs to happen. I think, you know, for Man United in the last couple of games, you know, getting those draws against West Ham and Villa, they've essentially lost themselves 4 points there, and that 4 points could have been the difference between the Champions League spot.
It's really interesting what you say as well, Rachel, because I remember back in November, I think after that Arsenal defeat, I wrote a piece specifically about the poor game management from Manchester United. And it's interesting to see where is that going to come from? Because they've got experience in that team. Mm-hmm. Neither Manny until she was injured, very experienced player, been playing the WSL for a very long time. Maria Torres-Dotter used to play for Chelsea. Hannah Blundell was at Chelsea for many years. Up the field, there's a little bit more inexperience with Toon, Russo. But defensively, Mary Earp's now, I think, 29. They've got good foundations to be consistent and be winners. But really, they need to show growth, I think, in the cup competitions. Yeah. If West Ham United are going to get to semi-finals twice in the space of 4 years, United, with their budget and their ambition, should be getting there as well. I think they did have a tough draw in the Conti Cup semis, getting Chelsea. If they had got Spurs, I think they would have got them into the Conti Cup final. But they need to be pushing more in those competitions, because that is going to be a really good opportunity for them to taste success. And obviously, Champions League qualification is going to be massive. But as they're creeping towards having a good budget and competing in the top four budget-wise against Arsenal, City, Chelsea, then you've got to compete in them for the similar trophies as well.
Yeah, and when I talk about experience, I mean as a group. And I think that is really quite valuable, because when you're in those situations, you need to know, as a group, how do we turn this around? And I think this will add to that for next season. But I totally agree with the importance of tasting success and the importance of going far into these cup competitions will have a massive impact on how they do in the league. So, yeah, it may not be Champions League for them this season, but I certainly think that and trophies will come in the coming years. And that's what I'll say to United fans is keep your heads up.
Be patient. Hashtag trust the process.
Yes.
Another bit of news this week is the government has confirmed that it's going to be launching an in-depth review into domestic women's football this summer with the aim of helping it close the gap with the men's game. What that means, no one really knows. But there was a very good review actually from Tracy Crouch, which I will give the government credit for, a fan-led review that was launched after the Super League plans. And there were lots of different elements that were created as part of that report and the findings. And they wanted to create an independent regulator, which they're trying to do, but the football bodies aren't particularly happy about it. They wanted more fan involvement in the game. They obviously want to really focus on the grassroots and the financial side of the game and ensure that the clubs are sustainable and they're protected as community assets. But one point of that as well was about reviewing the women's game and seeing what could be improved. I think Tracy Crouch is a good advocate for women's football. She's played it. I think she was coaching in it. You know, she knows the game well. So that's good because if she's involved, it's not going to be like people who are so completely unaware of how the system works or whatever. But at the same time, I don't necessarily think they're going to find anything that no one knew before. So that's why I just feel like it feels like a bit of a PR exercise for the sake of it. Whereas you could do something on a much smaller scale or even look at what reports that I'm sure the FA has created over the years. And they launch their new strategy every 4 years, and they've just launched a new one, I think, last year, didn't they, with new targets. You just look at that and that would kind of give you the answers. So I don't really understand what it's going to tell the world of women's football in the UK, anything that they don't already know.
I think, the fact that there's no kind of deadline that I've seen on it is, makes me slightly nervous. But I think any review and an investment into women's sport on its own is good. So rather than it being tied up in something else, the fact that there is a review of women's football, I think, is a good thing. I also think the fact that I appreciate what you're saying in terms of all of the stuff that's already been done and what's out there, and agree with the fact that we probably know a lot of this stuff already. But I think what this will do is at least give the government and the FA a bit more accountability in terms of you've seen what the issues are and what needs to be addressed. Now go and do it. You know, it's one thing having separate bodies identify these issues, but now hopefully, maybe I'm getting my hopes up a bit too much, but if you're going to carry out a review like that and identify areas that need improving, you're now hopefully going to have to be held accountable to go and improve those areas and to help invest in the game. But, we've seen these government reports on other things before and they've not always been entirely successful.
Yeah, Sue Gray, where are you at, hon? Like that player report's not even been released yet. It's been like 3 months since that was launched. So I don't know. I mean, we all know there's things that can be improved, right?
100%. But I think it's one of those cases that we'll only know how effective the report has been or is when we get it. And I think it could be a millennia before we see that report. But I think the only kind of positive that I'm taking away from it is that the report not only includes the elite level, but also at grassroots. And I think for me, that's where there's been a lack of attention, because the issues that women's football and non-binary people face at grassroots level are completely different to the issues that we face at elite level. I mean, access to pitch spaces and resources and, people relying on volunteers and committees, not sort of knowing the structures and protocols and things like that. So I think that'll be really interesting. I think, any attention on that area would be absolutely fantastic, really.
Yeah, you're right. I mean, say the government came in and said, well, if you are a local provider or a private company like Goals or Power League or whatever it is, you have to have protected space for women's football. I mean, that would be brilliant.
That would be amazing.
So something like that would be, I think, a really good idea, because I don't think until you really embed yourself in the game do you realise how bad the access is for women and girls to play football, especially in cities like London, where there's block booking, pitch space is really expensive. I mean, that is such a barrier and is one of the many reasons why women's football is such a white space at the moment, because women in inner cities are not given the opportunities to play football. So if they could come in and influence that I think more power to them.
And I think a lot of how effective the report is going to be depends on who is chosen for that independent panel. Mm. I think I'd like to see sort of...
Chloe Morgan on there, my friends.
I'm holding my hand up. I'm all about that.
Put me in the game, coach.
100%. I'll lead that bloody panel. Yeah, but I think, you know, you really do need a cross-section of the women's football community. You know, at every single level, clubs, organisations, grassroots teams, coaches, everyone to be involved in creating this report so that you really get a really genuine, authentic insight into what's happening at every level.
Yeah, yeah. I'm here for it. We shall wait and see, shouldn't we? What is everyone up to this weekend? I am going to be... at Arsenal, Aston Villa. I nearly forgot them. But yeah, Arsenal, Aston Villa at Boreham Wood.
I'll be at the last game of the season in Sheffield. Away. Cheeky little away trip.
That's not too bad as well. It's not that far. It's okay. It's manageable.
It's not too bad. The main thing getting me through is that we're going out in Manchester on Sunday. Yeah. Team big night out, end of season. And I've literally just recovered from Box Park. But...
Sunday night,
yeah, and then sort of crawling back to
she'll
London
still be
on
hanging
Monday.
Next Tuesday.
100%. I will be dying.
I'm not saying that your game isn't important, but
I know what you're saying.
Listeners really should be keeping an eye on Watford Cov United.
Oh my
massive
God.
Because honestly, it is going to be so good. I don't know if it's going to be streamed, and I really hope someone will stream it, either Watford Cov or the FA Player, because I think we were chatting before about we don't think it's been picked yet. But essentially, it's a winner-takes-all shootout for championship survival. Cov have managed to almost claw back their 10-point deduction, got a quality squad, but they could do the great escape if they can beat Watford. But if Watford win or get a draw, Watford will stay up.
Absolutely.
That game is definitely the one to keep an eye on. Rachel, where will you be?
I'm going to do Chelsea Spurs on Thursday.
Oh, and yes, I'm there as well, Kings Meadow.
We're up in Manchester. We're going to do Man City on Saturday. Soph's doing Man United on Sunday, Sunday 12 o'clock kickoff. I'm going down to Leicester. And I think she's going to go and do Birmingham on the way home. So quite
she's
a
crazy,
busy
man.
She is. Yeah, crazy.
Well, what a packed schedule you'll have. Enjoy your night out in Manchester. Can't wait for the picks.
Oh, think God. Of us.
Yeah, I will do. I'll
do
see you on Tuesday.
Do a few Jager bombs in our honour.
Tequila for me.
Yeah, no, definitely tequila for me too. That is it for today's episode of Upfront on Football Ramble Presents. If you've got any questions for us, tweet us at Football Ramble, at Floyd Tweet for myself, at Girls on the Ball for Rach, or at Morgie_89. We'll see you all next week.
Upfront is a Stack production and part of the Acast Creator Network.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
I'm Kate Thornton. Join me every week on White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks famous faces three thought-provoking questions over three glasses of wine.
It's very rare to be introduced with such a thorough introduction, and it's kind of lovely to listen to all that and go, yeah, I've had a good life, right?
You really have.
How did you find that? I can't even remember. Yeah.
You do your research, Kate, man. I'll tell you that.
Do you know what? You are the only person ever, no other journalist has ever made that connection.
Wow, what a great question.
And receives some truly memorable answers.
And Tom Cruise came and Nicole Kidman. I go to him, listen, before you go, Tom, I just want you to know, if you fancy a foursome, I'm up for it, and I know Anne-Marie doesn't mind.
When I first dated my now husband, I joined a gym for, I'm going to say, £1,000 a year, just so I could go off and have a poo.
Actually, I got heckled once in Wales, and there was a bloke at the bar on crutches, and he actually said to me, I'd rather fall over than listen to this shit. And he threw his crutches at me and fell over. Can you believe that?
I've got some cat's ashes, I don't know who they are.
You've been catfished by your own cat.
Exactly, seriously, man.
Dad, have you thought about putting in a breakfast nook? And my dad would think, have you thought about getting your own fucking house?
How did you give a duck an orgasm, Craig?
It's good with them, you know. I know my way around a duck.
So if you fancy a sit-down with the likes of Adam Hills, Tom Allen, Hannah Waddingham, Phil Tufnell, James Acaster and Ed Gamble, Daisy May Cooper and tons more, then join me every Tuesday and Friday. Search White Wine Question Time in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now. White Wine Question Time is a Stack production.